Today's episode is brought to you by Wise, the account that helps you manage your money around the world, which is huge for travelers. I've been a customer and a fan for 10 years. The Wise account helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, and they do it all without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This service has been so critical for me in my life as a traveler, as a nomad, as somebody living abroad. And you can join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account can help you out on the road at wise.com/travel. That's Wise, WISE.com/travel, or download the app. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at nissanusa.com. Inspiration can strike at any time, but the sparks that light the fire within often come from something outside of yourself. A conversation with a friend, a moving song, a chance encounter with a stranger, a moment you just can't shake. And if you allow these moments to ignite the flames of your soul, it will burn out of control and can change your life forever. Finding these moments is easy. We encounter inspiration everywhere. The difficult part is using that inspiration as a way forward and trusting the flames to guide you. Today's guests, Mark and Steffi, share some of the inspiring moments that led them to a life of travel, adventure, love, and music. As the only Chapman Stick duo in the world, they've taken an unconventional approach to earning a living on the road while making a difference. I hope you enjoy hearing their story today. It's sure to provide a spark of inspiration. What you do with it is up to you. Welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey there, it's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. At the time of recording, it is Valentine's Day that this show is released, so I want to remind you to be your own Valentine. We can always be our own Valentines, right? Love yourself, be your own Valentine, and treat yourself. Enjoy the day today. Now, that song you heard at the top was Cascade from Mark and Steffi's new album, Rising Tides, which is available on markwhitelive.com. Of course, we'll link to all of this in the show notes. And as you'll hear today, I discovered them through a random video, kind of tracked them down and said, hey, you got to come on the podcast and talk. I see you're traveling around. You're making a living from your art and you're doing it on your terms. That's what this show is all about, traveling the world on your terms. And every time I hear about somebody, in this case, a couple who has found their own way, their own path towards a life of travel, I'm inspired. I talked about inspiration at the top of the show. That fans my flames, and it reminds me that we can all find a unique path that allows us to incorporate as much travel as we want into our lives. And they've certainly done that. They've taken an unconventional approach to how they earn a living as musicians, as compared to how most musicians earn a living, giving them the freedom to roam. Of course, you'll hear some travel advice today. They offer up some advice for international couples. It's another thing that they've taken an unconventional approach to. They've found ways to stay together despite visa challenges and things like that. And they also talk about how music connects them as a couple and allows them to connect with a culture and so much more. I know you're going to love it. Stick around on the back end if you want to hear some thoughts around the conversation. I'll leave you with a quote as well. Thanks for being here and listening to the show. Don't forget, lastly, sign up at ZeroToTravel.com if you want to find out about new shows, get my weekly newsletter, and all that good stuff. You can sign up over there. Thanks again for listening, and enjoy my conversation with Mark and Steffi. I'll see you on the other side, my friend.
Well,
Well, I'm really excited to have you guys here. You're actually on the road right now then, or are you?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. We are performing, and we have 3 weeks here in Europe, and then we'll be off to Southeast Asia for 6 months for the winter
time. Is that going to be a performing schedule, or is there like some scheduled things and busking along the way, or you're just kind of winging it?
Well, we are going to wing it. We never actually schedule any performance that we do. It's we turn up and we say, "You feel like playing today?" And that's about it. that's our schedule.
Well, we sometimes get a lot of people requesting bookings, but we just say we don't even know where we're going to be in 3 weeks. So we usually turn everything down. We don't really like planning that far ahead. We just love being spontaneous and not having to be back at a certain day at a certain time.
I'm so excited to talk to you guys. All right. Well, I should just mention I am on with Mark White and Stephanie Barthel, the only Chapman Stick duo in the world, which is very cool. And I think you guys were performing in Tromsø, I believe, way up north in Norway. And I just happened to catch a video of both of you in Northern Norway. And I thought, these guys, they sound cool. This is interesting. And they seem like they're traveling around. Then I kind of read a little bit about your story and what you do with your album. So all the stuff we're going to get into today. And I saw, oh, I have to invite them on. Then I was hoping you were still in Norway so we could meet up in person. But you had already, then you were like in
Latin, we move quick.
Somewhere
else. We just had a month there. Yeah, we were just traveling through.
Did you enjoy your time in Norway?
Oh, absolutely. It was so stunning. It was definitely, landscape-wise, the most beautiful country I've ever seen.
Incredible. Incredible. It was it was amazing. Breathtaking. And all we can think about now is getting back there. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Well, I should formally say welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friends. That's my introduction here. And I wanted to start with where you guys met, because Mark, you're from Austin, and Steffi, you're from Germany. So
We met Australia, actually.
Tell me the story. How did it go down?
Well, that's actually that's a good story for her to tell.
Maybe
that's
how it started for me. I was just 19 years old and finished high school in Germany, and it's very common in Germany to just take a gap year and grab a backpack and travel the world for 1 year, and then you come back and continue your studies. So I was on my gap year in Australia, and within the first 3 months, I just happened to meet Mark in a hostel, and we just hang out together. We started traveling Australia for a while, and then my flight back home came closer and closer, and Mark kind of kept like popping that idea in my head that I don't have to take it. I could just stay. And
trying to corrupt her, you know.
Yes.
And
in the end, I just didn't go to the airport, and I just decided to stay one more year. I thought, what's just one more year? I mean, big deal. So I start my studies a year later. My parents were kind of not too excited, but very understanding. Said, you know, that's kind of why you left to begin with. So, figure out what you want in life, I guess. And it's been now almost 6 years. And
so that's off with the Texan from the hostel.
So that's kind of my story. But Mark has already been traveling for quite some time before we met.
How long have you been traveling?
I started back in 2015. I ended up booking a one-way ticket to Europe and just not coming back. I've been doing music for about 10 years in the U.S. before I left. And I had never really thought it was an option, as everybody from Texas kind of is. You know, we don't really have too much to inspire us for travel. And I ended up just going to Scotland for 3 weeks. And while I was there in Edinburgh, there was a kid playing his guitar in the street. And it was the first time that I saw a real good quality busker. And I looked in his case and I was like, "You're doing quite all right for yourself. You don't need any permits or anything." He's like, "No, you just show up. You're fine." And the crowd that he had, it looked amazing. So I was like, "Well, you know, maybe I can give that a go one of these days." And I got inspired, got back to my home, sold everything that I had, and rented my house out back home, and booked a one-way ticket, and just ended up, I was going to be like, "Well, how long can I keep this going?" And ended up, I just didn't come back. Did not come back. So it's quite wild.
Wow. So that was a shorter trip, and you saw this busker and had this sort of epiphany, if you will, and came back basically stripped down your life and took off and just wanted to see how far that would take you. And I guess it eventually took you to Steffi like a year or so later.
It was a couple of years later. Yeah. A
couple years later. Okay. Mm-hmm. Side note, I met my wife in a hostel in Brazil. So sometimes these hostel romances, they go so far that the next thing you know, here you are traveling the world together for years, or, you know, married with two kids in my case. So it's
congratulations.
Congratulations. Oh, yeah.
Do you have any advice for other international couples? Because I get that question sometimes.
Oh, man. Stay on the road. Don't do visas.
That is how we did it for the longest time. Just Mark only in Europe gets only a 90-day tourist visa. So for the first 2 years, we would just stay with my family for about 90 days. And then we just usually went somewhere together. But now for about 3 years, he has a working permit and working visa. And the whole like music business is all like legal and registered, and we're paying insurances and taxes on it. Like, we wanted to make sure that this really is a career for us. I guess it was also the compromise I had to do with my parents. Like, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it right.
Yeah. The pressure was on to make this legit. and with the visa situation, this is now my fourth year that I'm going on. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, opens up all of Europe for travel. And yeah, we usually stick around during Corona. That was very necessary. We could have gotten split up during this time. But ironically, because we ended up getting the visa 1 year prior, we actually got to stay together throughout the whole time, which was really incredible.
I have a cousin, and she also has now, luckily, a husband, but he was from Nigeria, and they were apart for 1.5 years during the lockdowns. And there was just no way for them to get a visa for one another. So we were definitely very fortunate that we were not in the same situation. Mm-hmm. And we used the time wisely. We got down to work and finished a new album. So it was not just Netflix and chill. We actually get to work.
And actually, we are engaged now. We got engaged last year in Croatia. And so, yeah, that's it's actually...
in the town of Split.
In the town of Split.
Unfortunate name, but...
But yeah, it's something that will be a couple of years until we actually figure out the logistics, because unfortunately it's not so much fun when you marry Americans, because we have, as you know, a lot of things that come with that as far as taxes and citizenship. It's quite a nightmare. So we're putting that off, and we're taking a very long honeymoon right now.
Yeah, nice. I love it. Yeah, I guess you could have got engaged in like a town called Married Forever Croatia, but instead, I guess that town doesn't exist. All right, well, tell me about the engagement, and I want to talk about a lot of the stuff you mentioned, because like just hearing your story a bit here in the beginning brings up, I think, a lot of themes of sort of pursuing creativity and travel and music and all the stuff. But I wanted to hear the story about how the engagement went down, because those are always fun.
Okay. Fun to hear. Yeah,
That is actually quite a long story, and unfortunately the listeners won't be able to see it, but these are actually our engagement necklaces.
I saw the matching necklace. Are they matching necklaces?
They are matching necklaces.
Yeah, but there's a good story behind that. We did some traveling in the Philippines, and in the north on the main island is a place called Banawe. That's where the 2,000-year-old rice terraces are. I believe it's 2,000 or 4,000 years old. Yeah. They live the same way still to this day that they did back then, living off the rice and living off the land. Mm-hmm. And they said all the rice terraces were built on love, because if a poor man wanted to get the woman of his dreams, he had to impress the father. And if you had about 10 to 15 terraces in the side of the mountain, you were considered rich. And so he would go to the mountain and start building until he had his 10 to 15 terraces. And then he would ask for the woman's hand in marriage. And so there was all these little serendipitous things about it. And ended up, before we left, we got this. I bought one of these necklaces there from a local smith. And Steffi was always jealous. She was like, you know, regret not
getting it. Like at the time, backpacking in Asia, I was a little low on cash. So I felt like I don't need to buy myself some jewelry right now. But I regretted that forever, because it's just such a cool story. It's such a pretty necklace. And we were trekking up there in the rice terraces for 3 days, and we had a tour guide, a local tour guide, and he showed us his uncle's place. It lives in one of those little like mud cabins, and it was just a fantastic experience. We were at the time together for only about a year, but a few years later, I kind of always gave the hint, well, if you ever think of proposing, just to let you know, I'm not a ring kind of girl. I don't care for diamonds, but I really wish I had such a beautiful necklace. So I kind of gave the hint.
It's so, yeah, I was like, yeah, that's my kind of girl right there.
No diamonds, just something memorable. But when we got to split, I always had this fantasy of proposing in Norway on a beautiful fjord that goes down into the ocean. But I couldn't wait. We got to a place where it was so gorgeous. It had cliffs that went off into the ocean, and the view was just spectacular. It was right next to the harbor, and I was just like, you know, this is it. It feels right. I'm going to do it. So we got to a place right beside the water, started to go over how we met, and ended up, I was like, all right, close your eyes. And I fumbled like crazy getting this thing off because yeah. I had taken it off ever since I put it on.
When I opened my eyes, he was down on one knee and having troubles opening up the necklace, but I just knew immediately what was about to happen.
And so the cool thing is like, after this, I've been, of course, missing it ever since. It's like, oh my God, a part of me's kind of gone. And when we were in Norway, we were at the base of a glacier near Olden.
I know. I have to take over from
okay.
here.
Okay. Yeah.
That was the thing. Yeah. And then he told me after that, yeah, he was going to wait for Norway, and that was like his dream. I was like, well, maybe I can make that dream come true in my own way. So I thought, how can I get my hands on one of those necklaces? So I looked through my old contacts, and I still found the phone number of the tour guide that we had 5 years ago. And I just rang him up and asked if he remembered us. And he was like, oh, sure, I remember you guys, musicians. And I asked, is there any chance you're still in that area? And he said, yeah, he still visits his uncle up there like once a week. And so I asked if he could stop by that goldsmith and grab me one of those necklaces and send it over. And of course, I paid him for that. And he did. And so I had it with me for about 7 months till I found the perfect spot in Norway. And then it was my time to propose.
Oh, God. She's acting so strange. It was quite weird. It was quite weird at first.
But that's so cool.
When she pulled it out of her pocket, I was like, How did you get from there to there? I didn't believe there was two at first. And then it's like my first guess was Amazon. It's like, no, yeah. It couldn't be. It's like, no, I wouldn't do that to you.
She didn't send it Amazon Prime, that's for sure. Yeah, I'm a little jealous of your Norwegian engagement because mine took place in the train station. I don't know why I was in such a hurry. There's all these beautiful fjords and all this stuff. And I was just like, train from America, bam, here we go, right in the train station. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to. I hope my wife's not listening to this. Don't worry, she won't. She's not. She doesn't listen to my podcast. I'll have to repropose to her another time. I like that. Maybe I'll have
hey,
to
no,
it's, I like that story, guys.
It's not the stories, though. It's really, it's who it is. I mean, that's the most important thing, is the person and the experiences and the life, for sure.
Of course, yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about music. Mark, it seems like you've been doing this for a while, playing the Chapman stick, or at least you were beforehand. I know Steffi started with Mark. I want to get to your side of this in a minute, but Mark, well, what was the first album you ever bought? Do you remember?
Oh God, first album that I bought. I'm sure that it was something that I long since forgotten about, like Eminem or something like that. You know, maybe Disturbed or something. Back when I was God. I mean, I always loved music for sure, definitely. But like with everybody, you go through so many different phases. But when everything really kind of started for me, when I went for guitar lessons to a guy in my hometown, he charged $25 an hour, and he was the only guitar teacher in Elgin, Texas. You know, it's about 30 miles east of Austin. And he had a Chapman stick. And, you know, it's always a weird thing in the corner. You know, if you don't know what it looks like, it has 12 strings, and you, again, tap the strings to generate the sound. And it looks like a guitar without a body, just the neck. And so he always had that in the corner. And one day I asked if he would play it for me right after one of the guitar lessons. And he played, and I was like, oh, my God. this thing sounds incredible. I was like, can you teach me this instead? And he was like, I don't know. You know, it's like, I'm still learning it myself. I don't feel confident in that. And I hounded him until he would, until he would give me a lesson on it. And it took a few months, but after a while, he's like, all right, let's see how you go. And he taught me a little bit of a song. And basically, he's like, at that time, he was thinking, you know, it'd be a really cool project if there was two of these things, if one day, like, we started a duo or something. And it just kind of, you know, was a moment in passing. But a couple of years later, I kept to the Chapman stick. I ended up buying my own. And he called me up one day. He's like, you know, you might remember when I was saying, you know, it'd be a cool idea to do a duo. Bring your Chapman stick over and let's see if we can work some songs out. And ended up I worked with Matt for about 10 years back home. We were the first Chapman stick duo. And we traveled all around the States. We mainly did festivals and markets in Texas. And we survived off of it full time for a good while, a good 10 years. But yeah, when I ended up leaving the States, we'd kind of gotten to a point in our lives where we wanted to kind of go separate ways. And after getting inspired to travel, again, when I first went out, it wasn't only this one kid that inspired me, but I was talking to Australians that were saying that, yeah, we're out for 2 years, you know? It's like, I was like, how's that even possible? I was like, oh, we stay in hostels and stuff. It's like, you mean the movie? As Americans, we only know the movie. But yeah, and so like this kind of inspired me to go out. And that was, of course, where I met Steffi. And we're now continuing where me and Matt left off, but with kind of a new style that's really cool. That's more of our own. And now we're just focusing on original material. So it's quite an exciting chapter.
Yeah. Steffi, when you met Mark, I guess it's also like meeting the Chapman stick too. It sounds like it's, you know, it's part of the relationship, right?
Yeah.
Like how did you start? Were you a musician beforehand? Did you?
That's the weird thing is I have absolutely no musical background. I never played an instrument before and it was never really on my mind. I always admired people that could play, but I never had the patience myself to actually sit down and learn an instrument. And
turns
out
I was... That wasn't the exactly how it turned out, I guess, right?
Yeah. So in all honesty, I first just really fell in love with Mark. And it was great that he was a musician, but it was for me not about, oh, I want to be a musician too. I was just wanted to spend time with Mark. And I was at the time staying in a hostel and I had a job on a blueberry farm picking blueberries. Didn't pay very well, so I really had to kind of squeeze every penny and try to save up so I could take some time off and travel a little bit. And again, I had like goals, like I wanted to dive on the Great Barrier Reef, which is not exactly cheap. So I thought this job is definitely not going to make it very easy to save up. Mark said to, you know, I'm moving so fast and I can work in every town when I just bring out the instrument. Me having like a fixed job was kind of just an obstacle. So he said, why don't you just come with me? And you can work for me. You can sell my CDs while I perform. And so I don't have to interrupt my songs when people ask about the CDs or the instrument. And so for a few weeks, I always had a little chair. I was sitting right next to him and I would talk to the people and the customers as he was performing. And even at the markets. And after a while, I just felt like it was not enough because he paid me a little bit for that. But I always felt like the music sells itself and he really wanted to be with me, but I don't want to be paid for being his girlfriend. I don't know if that makes any sense. So I said, I really admire what you want to do for me, but I just need to feel like I'm working for myself and not that he's my sugar daddy. And he said, yeah, he really understands. And he said, well, he really wanted to give me a lesson on the Chapman stick. And I tried it out and slowly the idea started that, yeah, this could actually be a long-term project, but it's hard to commit when you're only together for 2 months. And yeah, after about 6 months, I actually placed in the order for my own Chapman stick, which was quite the big step at the time. But I kept at it. I kept practicing. But at the beginning, it was still for me not so much about the music. I always practice a lot because I felt like I could impress him and then he'd be all proud of me.
It worked.
And it wasn't until like actually 2 years into it. And I still remember the moment very vividly where I really felt like a musician and like, yeah, this is my job now. This is my passion. Is we recorded our first album together and we had the CD produced, but then we left to New Zealand. So we weren't even there when the finished product arrived at our parents' place. And they sent over a box. And when the box arrived in New Zealand, we opened it up and I got out one of our CDs with a little picture on it. And really felt like, oh wow, this is our recording, this is our CD, our album. It really all of a sudden felt so professional.
Hit home.
Yeah, it really hit home then. And ever since I see myself as a very happy, passionate, full-time musician.
Wow. It sounds like it did take a couple of years to sort of like really develop the passion for it. That's really pretty interesting.
It was not planned the way that it came about. It really was, we were kind of just, well, how do we stay together? How do we keep traveling together? How do we not have to go through a breakup, you know? And because I know my love for traveling, for playing music, it doesn't lend itself to many other people's lives, for sure. And I knew that I was probably going to be facing a life of solitude. But after meeting Steffi, that was just the whole thing is like, well, how do we keep this going? And when she did the first lesson with the Chapman stick, she actually did better than I did, I realized. And of course, with any instrument, it takes time. But I realized that if she was willing to take on the responsibility of learning an instrument and the discipline, then this could be an option for us. And now, you know, this many years later, it's actually flourished into its own thing entirely. But it was nothing that neither one of us could force each other to do. This was just really all very much organic. But we were very lucky, very lucky.
How do you maintain that discipline when you're on the road?
Oh God.
Corona was actually a blessing for us. For a lot of musicians everywhere, this was the end all. But for us, we needed to slow down. We were in Hawaii when Corona actually
we were having too much fun. And yeah, you're right. While traveling, staying in hostels, it is really hard to maintain a disciplined routine with practice and all that. Actually, we had we call it a practice streak at home here. And that immediately stopped once we got to Norway because we were hiking all day. We got back off the mountain at like 9 p.m., which the sun still doesn't go down, but we were just too tired.
I don't want it to sound like we don't work because we do. But obviously when traveling, when the routine is kind of a little bit chaotic, we would have to really find time. And once one technique was we booked a Airbnb in Hanoi and stayed there for a month and really worked out new songs. So this is the kind of way that we would practice before and find time within our travel to slow down a little bit.
But during the lockdowns, we really got in about 4 or 5 hours of practice a day and we really hunkered down. So for us, it was actually, we needed to take the time off. It was just always too tempting to go somewhere else.
But when
we didn't have a choice, it was actually exactly what we needed.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under $50. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero-to-travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero-to-travel. Use the promo code zero-to-travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. Well, I understand there's a part of your story, you know, all of the travel and the duo that you have formed with the Chapman Stick duo. Some of that stuff, it sounds like it arose out of circumstance, of course, like you want to stay together, so you have to travel, and that's how you can be together and avoid the visa thing. And okay, well, you know, we need to be able to take our jobs and you're a musician, so let me teach you and all that stuff. But now there's another side of this, right? Like, you guys play and make music together. That's a pretty intimate thing. What is making music together as a couple, like, circumstance aside, kind of like past that now, you guys are engaged, and but there's that whole other side of like what this may or may not do for your relationship. Can you speak to what music does for your relationship or playing together and creating
it's
together?
Being, I've never had a student before either. This is my first student. And, so this was all very new experiences for me as well. And, to watch her grow throughout the years and to see the transitions happen was, enlightening. And now that we are able to play together almost on the same level, we've been doing it so long. It's like we're breathing together when we're doing music, and, it makes the whole relationship incredible. I mean, the whole relationship has grown with the music, and so it's an extension of it for sure.
And I feel like Mark and me really are almost the same person. We are so much alike. We both suffer from getting really grumpy when we're low blood sugared. So it's we're just so much alike. And,
when you live in a caddy, you know, mm-hmm. caddy van, you're in very close proximity
but
all the
we
time.
We really don't have many arguments, because it feels like if I disagree with him, it's almost like I disagree with myself in some way. And so any kind of band decisions or any, like, what do you want to do? Do you want to play this song or this song? We're always just so organic. And usually he says, okay, let's play this song. And I'm like, I was just going to say that. And that happens so often. So everything is always very easygoing with us.
Yeah.
And, but we also know other couples that are musicians. They are good friends of ours. And they're just very different people, and they clash a lot. They argue a lot over little decisions and little things.
They need breaks.
And they always take breaks from one another, too. They work, like, the summer season together in one place, but then for the winter they go separate places and take a break from one another.
I can't be a few hours without it. we've got to... For better or for worse, we've got to be together. But yeah, I mean, that's it. It's, you learn a lot about people when you travel with them. And within about 2-3 weeks, you know if you're compatible with somebody, whether it's a friend or somebody that you're connected with deeper. Yeah.
And if you drive through the Australian desert without a shower for 2 weeks, if your relationship can withstand that, then there's almost no surprises anymore.
Or food poisoning with both ends going wild.
And no toilet around. We've been there too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how travel together will pack all those experiences in a short amount of time. And then you really do get to know that person on a different level much more quickly than you would if you kind of lived a traditional life where you were, oh, let's go on a date this week. And, you know, like, it's like a year of dating happens in like a week and a half.
Oh, yeah, without question.
I wanted to hear a bit more about the busking experience. You guys have been so many different places playing music, and a musician's job in many ways is to travel around and play music, but it sounds like the travel also came first for you in many ways, or now maybe for you, Mark, it's a bit intertwined, but at least for Steffi, it came first. But yet, clearly you guys have a love and a passion for travel. And it sounds like these two things, you know, I think some artists, they get to a point where they just, you know, they don't want to travel, but it's like, oh, I got to go on tour now. And it sounds like for you guys, this is the way you live. This is your lifestyle. Is that right?
Yes, this is our job. It's our life, and it's completely custom made. But yes, I understand. A lot of musicians, this is the only way to make money, is to be on the road, is to have dates set, and to really do the grind. I know a lot of these musicians personally, and it doesn't sound as much fun. They always say, you know, can we switch lives? Because it
doesn't feel like that for you.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I because of what we do, and it lends itself very nicely to street performing.
Well, it's not you've very already intrusive. Been there too, so you've seen both sides. You've done the weddings, yep. You've done the shows, you've done the markets.
I did it back in the United States. Again, it's not a very common thing to do street performing back home, and we tried out many different techniques, but in Texas, including weddings and parties. But in the end, what worked the best was festivals. We would play an arts festival for sometimes 8 hours a day and sell our CDs, our self-produced CDs. And more often than not, we would pay to play there. And so we would be just like the next booth that would be selling their art. But instead, we'd be selling our self-produced albums. And believe it or not, it was very lucrative. We filled our calendar up with many of these, and we did quite well. Quite well for the time that we had there. But then when I got to Europe and to other places, I realized that busking is the same thing. It's just you're choosing your own times to perform. But there's many areas where it's like a festival every day. It's just the city centers are so bustling. They have more walking streets. And it's just ideal for this style. And what it allows you to do is complete freedom. You can play whenever you want. It's also a wonderful way to connect with the people in the place that you're traveling to. I can't tell you how many people that we've met and connected with just through busking that say, yeah, come on over. Let me show you around my town. Let me take you out for a coffee. Actually, that was the only time that we ate out in Norway was we met a fan on Facebook. That's his name was Doug, and he is from Arizona, and he took us out for the most expensive meals that we've ever eaten in our lives. And I said, Steffi is like, oh my God,
feels so bad. It's so expensive.
Feels so bad. It's so wrong. But he's retired, of course, and he's like, no, I want to treat you guys. And end up, mm-hmm. We just had the best conversations. He's a really incredible person. And this is kind of what the instrument has opened up on the travels. And so it's more or less a part of it, but it's also, yes, how we completely sustain ourselves.
I really like how it always seems to catch people by surprise. Sometimes we have people say, you guys shouldn't be playing in the streets. You should be playing on the stage. And we're like, oh, no. We choose to be here. Like, we really want to. It's just so much fun. And yeah, there's sometimes the sweetest experiences where people just come up and say, you just really made my day. I was such a rush or such a bad mood. But your music just really, like, on the way to work, really brought me out of it. And it's just little things like that that really are just worth it. And different countries react different to street performing, but that's why we can't wait to go back to Vietnam in 3 weeks. The Vietnamese are just so amazing when it comes to street performing. The first time we played there, I feel like they're not really used to it, and so like they start to watch for a second, and then some of them would go away. And then they come back with a six pack and they sit down and they listen for 2 hours. It's like a concert.
They'll listen until you stop. They'll make it. It'll be a concert in the street, which is quite unusual. It's something you don't get everywhere.
It's the reactions, yeah. And then they want to come up and they want to take pictures with us. It just feels so, so great.
Oh, it's
beautiful. What kind of insights can you get or have you gotten from the crowd in terms of like, does the crowd or the sort of interactions when you're busking teach you about the culture that you're in a different way that you can't learn from other means of travel? Or maybe it's more difficult. It seems like there are a lot of interactions going on. Of course, every crowd has a different vibe. I know going to a concert in Norway is a lot different than going to a concert in America. I'm just wondering, because you guys are playing out on the street, you're like with the people. I'm wondering how much of that you're able to kind of soak in, how much that tells you about a culture.
Well, it's wonderful because you're completely connected to your listener, and your listeners are the people of the country that you're visiting. And so it's not only just performing, we're talking with them, we're explaining them about the instrument, and we're having conversations all day. And usually, yeah, you kind of make friends from that. So yes, it's it is a deeper connection. And for being an artist, it's absolutely vital to be that connected to your to your customers and to your listeners, as to be performing right in front of them. There's no middleman as a busker. There's no, you know, I have to go through this bar in order to connect, or I have to go through this venue in order to connect. You are directly in front of your listener, and there's nothing better than that. Because let's face it, not every single one, but I've had bar owners come up to me and it's like, you sound incredible, but you're not from here. So you probably don't have friends and family that are going to come see you. So yeah, the drink sales wouldn't be good. So I can't hire you. You learn quickly what the music industry is about. And
what are some of your favorite places that you've played? Like streets or whatever? Countries?
I got to say Hanoi and Wan Kiem Lake.
The capital of Vietnam.
Yeah. There's a particular street that gets shut down from Friday to Sunday for foot traffic, and it's quite a large street. And that is an incredibly fun place to perform.
It's like a festival every weekend, and there's so many different artists that come out, and they play games in the streets,
tug of war and karaoke.
And so we usually go there every weekend just to be performing and to enjoy the experience.
And that's usually when we get down to business too, because during the week we can focus on music and practice, and then during the weekend we can go out and work.
But also I think Queenstown, New Zealand is one of our favorite places to play. It's just everything is so laid back. Germany has some really good places, but I feel I'm allowed to say it. Germans are very much by the books, and technically amplification is not legal in the whole country. We do it anyways, because the question is whether it's being enforced or not. And we found a few places where the police just clearly doesn't see a problem with us. Even though we're amplified, they don't enforce the law. But in most places in Germany, they do. And they say, sorry, you guys, what you do is beautiful, but amplifiers are not allowed. I have to ask you to leave. In Norway, we, for example, didn't have a problem at all. I felt the Norwegians were so laid back, and they all loved it, and we had great experiences busking. But whenever we set up in a new town in Germany, always kind of looking around, like, okay, when are they going to come and tell us to leave? Because about, I think, 8 out of 10 times they do in Germany.
Every country is different,
for sure.
There's other countries where people are not receptive to street performing at all. Where maybe it's even like a little bit looked down, or like, oh, you're playing on the street, you must not be that good. But it really depends on the place.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, we're going to link to your website in the show notes. So if people want to see some of the videos from around the world, you have a whole travels section you can click on. You can see you guys playing in, I mean, places like what I'm just looking right now, the Black Forest, a road trip in Spain, busking in Santiago. Really cool. The craft of music and songwriting, how does travel inspire your songwriting?
Well, it's when you get a moment. I mean, basically, for me, songwriting, I love it when things just pop out, when an idea just kind of just comes out, and then you can kind of build on that. But it comes in so many different ways. It's never really like, okay, I'm going to start writing a song right now. It's always like, I wonder how this, fiddling around with a little lick or something like that can lead into many different possibilities. I think the most unique time though that I wrote a song, I was actually, sleeping, and I had a dream, in the dream, I was going to a busking spot, and there was another musician there, and he said, yeah, I'm going to be 4 hours. I said, 4 hours? Oh, man. And so I was walking away. He brought out a Chapman stick, and he started playing a melody, and I just remember walking away. I was like, man, this guy's good. And then he had a whole band that came in with him. I was like, damn, that's an awesome melody. And so anyway, I woke up, and I was like, man, I'm going to steal that melody from him. So I go up, I run up into the top room. And
for me, it was 5 a.m. I wake up to him playing, and I'm like, what the hell?
No, anyway, I wrote a whole song, and I called it Dreamcatcher. And it actually, that's on our new CD. It actually worked out quite well. But yeah, that main melody that that is on the verse, that was what I heard in my dream, and I just kind of built from there. And it turned into a really cool composition in the end. But yeah, that was, I think, the most interesting time.
But also your trip to Ireland really got you into the Celtic music.
Yeah, I mean, every single bar in Ireland that always has music playing, it's a wonderful music culture. And that's the music I connect with the most. That's what I love. And usually when I write, it always comes out. It's always a bit of the blues background or the Celtic. And so that's usually the styles that that flourish on it.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm sure you're getting some inspiration from just hearing music in different countries and their own musical culture, and I'm sure that works its way into some of your compositions. It's cool that you guys have planted 32,400 trees with your music. Can you talk about that?
That was
that's Steffi's. Well, she got it started on that.
I was saying earlier, I was in Australia on my gap year and about to go after 1 year back home to university and study. And I wanted to study environmental protection. That's just ever since a child been a passion of mine. I love nature shows. And whenever I see somebody like chasing a whale and like tracking it with the GPS tracker so they can study their migration routes, I always thought as a child, I could be that person. I could be that person on the boat. And I always just felt really connected to the environment and always felt like I wanted to do my part. And that was the one thing I always felt just a little bit in the back of my head I was giving up by choosing music as a new career choice. And actually happened upon this, it was just last year, and in the lockdowns in Germany, I was just scrolling through my social media and just some ad popped up of a new startup company from Hamburg, from Germany. It's a condom producing company.
Relief
is what they're called. And they advertise for each condom they sell, they plant a tree. So they say, yeah, have some fun, do something good for the environment. And I just thought that was hilarious. And I was like, hey, Mark, check this out. And Mark just looked at me and said, you always wanted to do something like this. If they can plant trees selling a product, then we can too, because we are selling a product as well. So I actually got in touch with that company and I was emailing the CEO and just asked more about the project and said, yeah, they are... chose a reforestation organization from California called Eden Reforestation Project as a tree planting partner. And for every condom they sell, they would donate to the reforestation organization to plant trees in certain countries. And then we got in touch with Eden Reforestation and we said, we are selling CDs. We would like to do something similar. And yeah, we set it all up. And they have project sites in 8 different countries, mostly third world countries and Africa, Asia, and South America. And so every month we count up how many CDs or downloads of our music we sold, and we donate our portion to them, and they plant the trees.
It's quite a new project. We started in April of last year, and so it's been a bit over a year now, but it's always exciting because now it's not only when we go out busking, it's like how much do we make, but how many trees do we plant? And so it's kind of a different mentality and a really almost a personal goal now. But yeah, mm-hmm. That's our compromise. So you can still do environmental work as well as doing music.
I love it. And it's another thing that can get you out the door maybe when you don't necessarily feel like being on a cold, rainy street that particular mm-hmm. day. Right. Another motivating force, if you will. No, I think it's a beautiful thing. I mean, you don't certainly have to make that as a part of your project, but anyway, I'm just applauding you guys for
it's definitely more just one of our personal projects. We thought at the beginning, hey, it may also be great advertisement, but I think in the end people buy the music because they want to buy the music. So it's just our personal little project.
Yeah, it's something cool as well. Hopefully it can inspire people to contribute themselves. I've already heard musicians that kind of see that what we're doing. They're like, hey, you know, can you send me a little information about these guys? You know, I was thinking maybe I could do it too. And so hopefully it'll be a trend that we see more.
We were thinking like if two little street performers can do something like this and maybe some big business, maybe I don't know, maybe they get a little inspired by that, who knows.
Mm-hmm. yeah
that's
sure
a whole, I mean,
You got inspired by the condom company, and then inspired somebody else.
Oh yeah, I still use them full time.
You know, I love these interviews because I get to know incredible people like yourselves, and also I never can predict some words that will come up. Like I didn't think the word condom would come up in this conversation.
Well, there you go.
Well, you really gave us nothing to go off of, like to prepare. So
who knew?
Yeah, completely uncensored.
I know some people struggle with embracing an identity of an artist, right? And I'm just curious for either of you, you know, imposter syndrome is a real thing for every business and profession. I feel like that, this idea that maybe you don't feel you're good enough or you're expert enough to do this, that, and the other. It's a different kind of career. I think we can agree that a lot of Western culture, sort of the, I'm using air quotes, the acceptable path would be more maybe like working for a company or, you know, doing a 9-to-5 type of thing. So to choose the path of an artist is a different, it's just a different profession, but it, in some cases I feel like it's a lot harder because maybe people don't have the support, or it could be just maybe they have the support but they don't have the confidence, or there's maybe an internal struggle to just kind of embrace that as like, hey, I am an artist, this is who I am, this is what I do. Can you just share some advice or just talk about your own personal journey, maybe through that?
Definitely. I mean, it really is hard. I got to admit, the conventional methods that artists have to go through in order to make a living, which let's face it, it's very important to live off of your music or off of your art in general. But speaking from a musician standpoint, it's not easy. I would recommend, of course, number one, Spotify is a very used platform, as well as a lot of other streaming platforms. But as always, the musician's kind of the last person to get paid in the end. And using these conventional methods can be very damaging to musicians. And I know it's, of course, wonderful products. And the idea of renting music is definitely, instead of buying, is definitely a wonderful idea. But it doesn't leave much room to the musicians. There is definitely a lot of money being made from these subscriptions, but it doesn't really get passed along, unfortunately. And that's why we sell everything directly. So there's no middleman in between us and our music. And I think that's been very crucial in order to make it as a musician. But if you can financially make it, then you can feel confident in calling yourself a musician. I think that's a lot of struggle that many musicians have. So I believe the methods for that are to not go the conventional methods, you know, the conventional way of, yes, you need to go put in your time, do the bar shows, do this or do that. And granted, every musician is different, but it's much harder I found in my own experience, if you do the more structured conventional method that everybody says to go on to be a musician, it's much better to find your own way, because there is definitely a place there for you. But yeah, usually it's difficult. It's what everybody's telling you is usually not correct, and there are people making money out there, but it's very unlikely to be able to survive off of it for a lot of us, for a lot of the independent artists.
Steffi, how about your journey to becoming to embracing yourself as an artist, as a musician?
Yeah, you were mentioning earlier, doing something that is so out of the box. Not doing like what everybody else does. It definitely is, I told earlier when I called up my parents, and I mean, you got to imagine too, from a parent's point of view, I mean, you're a dad. Just imagine your 19-year-old daughter calls from Australia, says, "Mom, Dad, I met an American musician. By the way, I'm not coming home to study. I'll be a musician myself now." I think it's just a normal reaction of a parent to be a little worried and skeptical first. Like, who is this guy? What kind of music? And first of all, what? So, but they were, of course, very skeptical first. And at the beginning, not they're not like not supporting me, but they're also not very happy with my decision at the point, which makes just perfect sense. But the year later, when I did come home, I just brought Mark with me and I got a chance to meet him. They got to see that, yeah, he is a professional and that he's a really, really nice guy. My dad actually gave him a hug and said, yeah, thank you for taking care of my daughter for so long. So that was really sweet. After, they were still for the first year always trying to convince me, so what about university? What about maybe learning a trade, get a like secure job, a fixed income every month? I think that's just normal because, yeah, I really was a naive 19-year-old that wanted to be a musician. And I think it's really hard to be taken seriously at this age, especially from parents. And even friends were very skeptical. It's like, yeah, I just want to continue travel, having fun. But questions like, what about the future? How do you pay your health insurance? What about retirement? How will you ever support a family? Those are all questions I didn't even want to ask myself at the time. But eventually you got to just confront yourself with it. And I got to say, setting up, like actually making this a business with tax registration and with insurance and all that makes me also just feel much more like this is a profession, because I felt like I had to convince myself too, not just the others, but myself.
When you have this much fun,
it's that this can be a career. That when you're having this much fun, it feels like, I don't know if this is a job. It's like,
I'm not allowed
like
to be
work.
Having fun at my job.
Like it doesn't feel like work. But that's actually where I really got the support from my mom, especially as we had a show at a festival in my town. And the show was on, like, we were on stage for only about 45 minutes, but we had a little booth with our albums. And I just asked my mom if she could come and talk to the people, answer their questions while we were on stage and sell our CDs. And at the end, she was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I sold like 30 copies of your music. I was like, Mom, I told you for years that this is working well. And she's like, well, yeah, I just didn't know how well it was working. And she said, yeah, it was so happy. Like, she got to meet so many people that evening. She got to talk to strangers and everybody, of course, said how great her music was. And she said she was just so proud.
It's a fun business.
Yeah, so I think that when I started to include her a little bit more on what we did, and now I really got her full support, and she is really coming through for us too. She always helps us out when we need a little help. When we were traveling and we ran out of envelopes and we have online orders of CDs, so I just asked my mom if she could just go ahead and send out a few CDs for us, and she doesn't hesitate to help us out with that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Your mom sounds awesome. You know, it helps when you got the free merch lady coming in, right? Like, we're not gonna pay you, just come over here. And no, but I think it's it could be almost a bit of a piece of advice for some people listening, maybe in some of those situations where they're not getting the support, or it doesn't sound like you weren't totally getting the support, but like you said, they were skeptical, their parents, maybe a little pushback and planting some seeds of, hey, maybe, you know, might be good to do a trade and some of the other things they were saying. But if somebody's listening and they, you know, they're getting that, perhaps just getting that parent or that person involved in what you're doing really brings it to life. I mean, it sounds like that like sort of, it was conceptual to your mother before she actually went out and was a part of the show and interacted with the people and saw and experienced it, right? And then it became like more of a real thing for her.
And also what she really told me, like a few years later, when that conversation came up, yeah, how at the beginning, how, yeah, they tried to, or she tried to convince me maybe to find a career choice that's a little more secure and a little more stable. She did say, well, you would have not enjoyed it either if I would just say, yeah, go ahead, do what you do, I don't care. Like, her being skeptical in the beginning just really shows that she loves me a lot and that she just wants the best for me. And I think other people that want to travel that get that side, like it's not anything personal. Actually, it's just a sign of love from their parents, and they just always want to watch out for you, and they're just a little worried on that your choices might lead you in the near future into some trouble. And I think to keep that in mind, like, I wasn't upset with my parents for at the beginning not showing me full support. I think it would be weird if they did to an idea that is so crazy and so far out there.
Right. Sure. Run off with the Chapman stick guy. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
Most important thing is to show financial stability. And then they're like,
okay,
you know, he hasn't asked me for money. And last time I asked my parents, I was 19, and it was the last time ever, because my dad made me work off the cash at his ranch, and that was still the hardest money I ever had to work for. So savings is very important.
Yeah, that is one thing Mark like told me from the very beginning is savings. It's like, you never know, maybe one of these days there'll be a time where you can't work for a whole year. And I was thinking, what possible scenario could that be? And then a pandemic happened. It's like,
you started at a really great time.
Yeah, it was a little bad timing, but again, we still had the savings. We were actually able to not have to ask our parents for money even during this time. And I think that is a very big step, is try to make sure you're financially okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, one thing you also did is even though you were getting that messaging, you still stuck to what you were doing. And that's not always easy, right? When you're getting the pressure from certain people and to do this, that, and the other, you can start to question yourself, but it sounds like you really just stayed true to living the life you were loving and enjoying and just following that path. And I feel like sometimes, you know, the organic path, although in theory should be the easiest one to follow, right? It's kind of like, well, this is just happening and I'm going to go with this. But in some ways it's the hardest, because you get all this external messaging that tells you what you're supposed to do. And, you know, maybe what we're all really supposed to do is just what we're organically supposed to do, whatever that means. That's kind of hard. That's where like your intuition and sort of some of that stuff comes into play. And that's really hard to speak on and to measure, and it's hard to do those gut checks and make those decisions in that way.
It is. I think everybody has a little bit of pressure coming from one side of life or the other. Sometimes it's yourself, sometimes it's your family. But in the end, the gut feelings, if you follow them, they'll always lead you to the right place. And I think for a lot of people, to have that freedom is really life. That's where life happens, is in between those moments. But yeah.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning. And you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. Backpacking. I just want to talk about some destinations for backpacking, or, you know, but I guess budget travel or just travel in general. I mean, you mentioned some of the places you like to play and some of the places you like to visit with the music experience, but are there other places that you just from a travel, purely travel perspective, you love to go? That you would recommend
that's
to other people?
Definitely Southeast Asia. That's where we're going.
Oh, yeah, okay,
so far,
yeah.
We found that one place where we actually do quite well, and that's Hanoi in Vietnam. But the other places, we will still be playing, but I think it will be mostly for fun, like maybe bring out the Chapman stick in the hostel.
We don't always do it for money, yeah. For sure. There's many situations where you don't always have a place to busk, but for instance, in Cambodia, I would just bring in the instrument and just ask, would you like to hear some music? And more often than not, they said, yeah, go ahead. And after the performance, sometimes they come up and say, well, sounds great. Come back tomorrow night. Would you like a place to stay? Would you like some beer? So, well, of course, I would love that. So, yeah, it's a different experience every time. And every country is going to be a little different on how to do it. But, yeah, it's very diverse. I mean, but, yeah, Southeast Asia is very easy to travel. We love staying in hostels because, obviously, you know, you're never alone when you're in a hostel. We've met some incredible friends there that long-lasting friendships. And it's just a wonderful way to travel. So that's what we'll be entering back into. We'll be leaving the van life here in Europe and going back to the hostel life for 6 months through this winter.
Oh, have you been living in the van in Europe?
So, yeah, in Europe, we built out an old postcar from Austria. It's a tiny Caddy Maxi. It's a very miniature van, but it has great gas mileage. It came in handy in Norway. But, yeah, we built that out over the pandemic. We use that to travel all around Europe.
Yeah. So in Europe, we don't pay anything for accommodation. We have our home with us. But, yeah, in Asia, we'll go back into the hostels. So it's a nice balance. It's like we now lived in the van like almost a whole year, and now we can't wait to have the hostels. But I think after the hostels for 6 months, we can't wait to have our van again.
Do you think living in the van, traveling through Europe that way is kind of like one of the best ways to do Europe?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's very hard to do so for someone that's coming on a tourist visa because 90 days is not that much. And more often than not, to buy a van, you have to have an address. You have to have it registered. It's not as easy as Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah. Are there workarounds for that or not really?
We haven't looked into it too much. Most people that we know, they built out their own vans. Renting them is always expensive. And so it's always, but for those who are looking to try the van life experience, New Zealand and Australia are much easier to get started. And of course, the one-year working visas that they have out there for farm picking are very easy to acquire. And so I believe in New Zealand, all you have to do to transfer a van in your name is go to the post office and pay $7 and $7 or $12. And then it's all on the computer. I think I came in with a halfway filled out form and they said, yep, don't worry. It's all on the computer. It's like, oh my God, I gotta move here. It's so simple. But for those who are looking to try it, those are wonderful places. There's a lot of backpackers that are always coming and going, buying and selling vans that are built out already. And so it's a wonderful place if you wanted to get a taste of that lifestyle.
Can I ask you how much the whole building out of the van and the van and everything cost roughly?
Well, we bought the van itself. It was just an empty shell for 5,800 euros. And then the entire build out, like including everything, like we have solar on the roof, we have two big batteries with it. And that was maybe just another 1,500 euros on top of it. So it's definitely a very small little budget camper van, but we like it that way because we usually perform in city centers and parking in Europe can be a nightmare in these small towns and small streets. So we wanted to make sure that we have the clearance to fit in any underground parking garage or any possible parking lot. So it's definitely a very small van.
In Europe, smaller is better. The smaller you are with the van, the more freedom you have and the more you're going to be able to see. Because Europe is not just about the nature, it's also about the cities and about the architecture. And you want to be able to go in the middle of Prague or downtown Munich or, on a fjord in Norway. So you want the diversity for sure.
What are some of your most used, your favorite travel resources, stuff that you use all the time to kind of just logistic stuff or anything really that you want to share that you really love to use on the road? Apps?
Travel resources? Oh, apps.
Yeah,
oh,
apps, yeah. Websites, anything like that.
For flights and everything, we usually use Skyscanner. That's usually the go-to or Google Flights. But I think for Europe, for travel, the most important one is Park4Night. I think that's a very common one that's used. And unfortunately, we haven't found a better one.
Park4Night?
Park4Night. In America, there's iOverlander. That one's quite good. That will give you very detailed descriptions.
In Australia, New Zealand is an app called CamperMate. It shows you anything that a backpacker would need. Wi-Fi, water, public toilets, free campsites, paid campsites, all that.
What's that one called?
Camper mate.
Okay.
Yeah. And the park for night usually is just for parking, not campsites, but just parking. But it usually shows you on how much the parking is, if it costs at all. And yeah, people can write comments. That sometimes comes in handy. Like we were at some campsites where there was broken car glass and the comments said, yeah, don't stay here. Like
I got broken into while I was in my van and robbed and nobody came to help. And we're like, I think we're going to go to the next one.
Really? Like you were in the van and somebody
no,
was...
No, it was not us. This was a comment that we were reading while we were in a campsite. And we're like, okay, next one. Yeah. And then we looked at the date on it. It was like 2 days prior. So this can really come in handy on the road. And it can save you a lot of heartache.
But other than that, we use Google Maps for almost finding out anything. Post offices, Wi-Fi, almost anything we use Google Maps for.
And for booking accommodations or saving money or any tips that you guys want to share there?
We actually, when we do use hostels, we'll use Hostel World to do the research on which one we want to stay at.
Go with the ones with the good ratings.
But we'll usually book it through another source because they add their fees. But yeah, you know, little tricks that you kind of figure out.
Sometimes we try to find a hostel on Hostel World, but then we try to call it up like directly and ask like the price when you book it over the phone or in person. The weird thing in a lot of places in Asia is it's actually cheaper to go through a third party like Booking.com or Hostel World than it is to book directly.
Or Agoda.
Or Agoda, yeah. So we just like ask for both options and then we choose whichever costs less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. I just wanted to get some practical advice. I've been doing this for a while, so super helpful stuff.
Oh, what really comes in handy for Europe, I have an app called Public Toilets. Because, yeah, where are public toilets?
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Because, yeah, I'm always complaining that there's no toilets.
Every American does. Oh, yeah.
And I hate the fact that sometimes they cost 50 cents. Like, why? is a normal bodily human function?
There's, like, some place costs, like, $4 here.
I'm like, I know.
In Norway.
That was crazy. We really... we really go our extra mile to try to find a free bathroom. Like, that's very important for us.
Literally go the extra mile to find a free bathroom.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
it's funny because I just found like a new one in Oslo the other day and I just bookmarked it in my head. I was like, oh, this is good.
Absolutely.
To know.
Bathroom even right if I here. See a porta potty on the side of the road, I'm like, Steffi, toilet, free one.
That's another advice. Construction sites usually always have porta potties.
Yeah. Oh, okay. There you go.
Sneak in, sneak out. Probably not the best advice, but.
Or if worst comes to worst, always be friendly with a smile. Walk inside a restaurant and politely ask, can I please use your bathroom? And nobody will ever say no.
So, well, they sometimes do, but it's usually they don't care. And just get up the courage to go in and ask politely. And usually they'll always let you use the bathroom. So that's our go-to in the cities for sure.
Yeah. Like never be afraid to ask anything.
Mm-hmm.
Do y'all have a favorite quote or a saying or something you think about that's a bit of a mantra for you or anything like that?
My favorite is don't trade time for money. I actually don't know who said it or anything like that, but this is a phrase that always sticks with me. And every time that it comes to any big decisions in life or taking a show or something like that, it's like, do something because you love it. Don't trade time for money. That's a very good thing to remember, I think.
I don't know if I have one.
Okay.
But for a while, we always kept saying, what would Jonathan do? Because we met this, we were in Croatia last year and we were just camping out and we were already with two other backpackers sitting in our van. I got to say again, it's a tiny, tiny little van. We managed to fit four people in the couch in the back because it was really cold outside. And then there's like 19-year-old kid on a bicycle just walks up and just looks in our van and said, looks cozy. Can you scooch? Can I fit in? Just out of nowhere. And I just loved his confidence and courage. We're like, yeah, sure. Come on in. Come on in. And yeah, he attached his tent with the bicycle to our tires because it was so windy outside. And we actually hang out with him for a few days. And he was just this 19-year-old biking from Germany to Israel, and he was dumpster diving for food. He was just so charismatic,
confident.
Mm-hmm. And I felt sometimes being in Germany, like I feel everything is a little more tight and a little more by the books. I start to slip back into that from time to time, but that kid kind of just reminded me on, you don't have to be afraid to ask people and to be polite and like right before he left, we asked if he needed some water, and he said, no, I'm just going to ask in a restaurant to fill up my bottles. It's like, well, yeah, of course, why not? And,
right. Yeah, that's cool.
So I kind of remind myself, yeah, what would Jonathan do?
What would Jonathan do?
What would Jonathan do?
Anytime there's a moment, it's like, should we park it? What would Jonathan do? Of course he would park it.
Jonathan, if you're listening, we got to get you on the podcast, my man. Oh.
He was biking all the way down to Israel, so I bet he has some interesting stories to tell. Yeah. For sure. Well,
that's a great example of just kind of putting yourself out there, and you guys ended up hanging out for multiple days, and you know that wouldn't happen if you don't put yourself out there. So it's,
his confidence to just walk up to us like a bunch of strangers and ask if he could warm himself up in our van when we were already like clearly crammed in there, the four of us.
Like, of course.
I just love that. Yeah, just like not being afraid of people and just being a people's person. I really like that.
Most people would be like, I don't want to inconvenience these people. They're already jam packed in there. Like, so
yeah. You know? I was like, oh, I hope I don't upset anybody.
Oh, we love to be bothered. We love it.
Well, why don't you guys let everybody know where they can find all the goodies and anything you want to mention here, new albums.
No worries.
Whatnot.
Yeah, we have, I think, a total of 7 or 8 albums now, all available on our website. Our website is markwhitelive.com. We do CD mail outs as well as digital downloads. And if you want to check out our music, feel free to visit the website.
On the website, you can sample every song of every album and really get an idea on what the CDs are about. They're all in different themes, like romantic, classic rock, but our favorite is definitely Celtic and our original material.
And the last albums that we came out with were Rising Tide and New Beginning. And of course, every album plants 5 trees. So if you guys want to contribute to the cause as well, best way is just to grab some music. But if you want to follow our travels on social media, we are under Cascade Melodies.
Yeah, all small together, Cascade Melodies. That's our YouTube channel, Instagram, Facebook, whatever you want to follow us on. Mm-hmm.
I just followed Cascade Melodies on Instagram. So look forward to keeping in touch with you guys. And I wanted to play one of your songs on the way out of this show later. If you can send me one, maybe you can just tell me which one we can hear and tell us a little bit about it.
No problem.
Which song do you think?
You know, we can play maybe one of the new ones. You guys will dig it. How about the one we were talking about, Dreamcatcher?
Okay.
This is the one that, of course, I wrote in the dream that I had. I think that would be a really, really cool kind of thing to show. So we'll go ahead and send that one over to you, and you can go ahead and put it on the end.
Cool. We'll play the show out with that track. And I mean, you know, part of the show, I guess one of the themes is, you know, we all want to help each other catch our own version of our whatever dreams are, right? So, and it's just been so cool to get to know you both and see how you've been able to kind of catch your own dreams and create your own life doing something you love and do it together and find the ways around some of the tough parts of the music industry and find the ways around, you know, not being able to be together as a couple and just kind of finding different ways to stay together and do what you love. Super inspiring to me. So I just really appreciate you guys taking the time to come
Jason.
On the show and share your story today.
Jason, thanks so much for having us. This is really a privilege, and any chance that we get to talk about travel, anything like that.
I mean, we'll let you know when we come back to Norway. Next time we got to meet in person.
Absolutely.
Please do. You know, I'm in the loft here. I got a couch here and we got a bed, and I think we got some room for the Chapman sticks in the corner over there. I'd like a little lesson if you don't mind giving me one.
Oh yeah.
I can keep the inspiration going. Betcha. Student number 2.
I love that. So hit me up on it if you guys make it back. It sounds like you'll be back in Norway.
We will.
We loved it.
It was amazing,
not
guys.
Not far from Germany either, you know. So,
you got to come down here to Lake Constance one of these days.
Yeah, that's where we are right now. It's our favorite performance spot. It's the biggest lake in Germany and Switzerland and Austria. It borders those 3 countries.
Oh, yeah.
And there's these cute little fairy tale towns all around, and people come here to vacation. Everybody's on holiday and super laid back and always happy. And that's our favorite performance spot.
2 months out of the year, you'll see us here, regardless, for sure.
How far is that from Hamburg?
hot. That's the complete opposite
end.
That's at the very south of the mountains.
We have some family over there.
Oh, no. Yeah, you can make, again, compared to Texas, like everything's close in this place.
Yeah, right.
Texas is bigger than Germany.
Cool. Well, we'll link to all of the various resources, your website, and all the stuff we talked about today. And again, thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks again.
There you have it. I want to thank Mark and Steffi for their time. As promised, we're going to leave you with one of their songs as we head on out, let you go about your day. Hope this inspired you, going back to the theme at the top of the show. Inspiration. Did this light the flames in your soul, give you some new ideas on how you might be able to take an unconventional approach to your current career or your field, perhaps taking an unconventional approach to something else that you have going on in your life that can allow you to incorporate more travel? This gave me a lot of food for thought and hope it did the same for you. I want to leave you with a quote before I let you go and say thank you once again for being a part of this community. I invite you to get in touch if you have any questions, any recommendations for guests. If you haven't left a review and you want to do that, those are always nice. Anything like that, you can reach me via email, jason@zerototravel.com, or better yet, leave me a voicemail. I have a link in all the show notes and respond to all of them and listen to all of them. So I'd love to hear from you. And thanks again for being a part of this community. I'll leave you with a simple Zen saying, and then you can enjoy the sounds of the Chapman Stick as Mark and Steffi play one of their new songs, Dream Catcher, off of their new album. I'll leave you with this Zen saying, only 5 words, simple yet profound. Breathe deep and let go. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week. Cheers.